This is 161st Street, Yankee Stadium.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Four Train Savages podcast. We have episode number 113. Today is an off day for the Yankees before they head out to Fenway, go play the Boston Red Sox. The Yankees just took a very, very, very important series against the Tampa Bay Rays, took 2 out of 3 after looking rough on Derek Jeter night on Friday. They also, before the last time that we spoke on this pod, they also took 3 out of 4 against the Minnesota Twins. So the Yankees have a good streak of wins, one series now. They're winning games again. They're winning series of what we asked them to do. They are still have a okay division lead, not exactly what we were looking for. We now have a 5.5 game lead on Tampa Bay, so we're feeling a little better than we did previously. But we are now, as I said, we're heading into Boston. Tyler, how are we feeling?
Rob, how we doing? We were both at the stadium last week, Wednesday for us. Shout out Pilot Penn. And then Friday, Jeter night, we were not together, but we were there in spirit together. Feeling good, dude. 5-2 homestand, even though we're both a little under the weather today. Could be some Yankee Stadium, little germs floating around. Don't know. It was an exciting time. But yeah, dude, it's honestly, I mean, if you look at the schedule, Tampa's got a crazy tough schedule coming up. Toronto's right there, but feeling 1,000 times better doing this pod than doing the last pod. Couple dudes came back, couple dudes went on the IL, couple dudes are rehabbing right now, some that may be closer than others, some that may be a big contributor in the playoffs. But yeah, dude, I'm feeling much better on this off day than if they, you know, lost this series. When was the last time they won two back-to-back series? I feel like it's been a while, dude. At least, probably, dude, did they do it? They definitely didn't do it in August, dude. So July, I think, probably.
July. Yeah, so it's a good sight to see with the Yankees. As we always do, we just ask them to win series. And like you said, Tampa has a little bit of a tougher road on the schedule. I personally don't think that you can put all your chips on a strength of schedule, because the Yankees don't really have any pushover games outside of Pittsburgh and maybe Texas at the end of the year that you could say. You got Boston twice, which is always a rivalry, which will always be juiced up, even that Boston is out of looking like they're out of playoff contention as of now. They always play those games tougher. And then you have Toronto, Baltimore, Milwaukee is still a good team. So just keep winning series and you'll be fine. As you have a 5.5 game lead, just keep winning series and you'll be in good shape is what I would say. And because the Yankees just had such a bad month of August for then Tampa to just gain ground.
It would be honestly tough for them to make it up. Like 21 games it feels like a lot of games. It's kind of not. I think Jack Curry did the math on the post game. He said something like the Yankees would have to go 10-9 and the Rays would have to go like 19-4 or like 19-3 to win the division.
Listen,
which is tough, but I'm not parading the division at all right now. But they're in this 5.5 game lead now is a lot bigger than it was 5.5 games before the Tampa series. Obviously, because they don't play Tampa anymore.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They play Toronto, though.
So, before we hop into what happened with the Tampa series, we're going to kind of skim over the Minnesota series. Nothing really other, no huge takeaways. But there are some injury stuff, that injury updates, injury news to go through. Matt Carpenter had a check-in, but now it looks like he's being delayed about another week and a half or so to then check up on that foot. That's a huge blow. That before the season, if you told us that we were really thinking about Matt Carpenter being an X factor on this team,
that'd be wild.
Crazy.
Wild.
Crazy to me. DJ LeMahieu lands on the IL with a toe injury, so he will be, I think they said the timetable is, was it, is he going to take the whole 7 to 10 days? I forget.
I mean, if I had to guess, it seems like he would take that, if not longer, because I could see them waiting the whole, like, road trip and just bringing him back at home. I think they come back, like, the 20, maybe, like, a week, something like that. So I could see them waiting even longer, honestly, and giving him 2 full weeks to ramp up before the postseason. I don't know. Like, it's so weird with his toe. They said he has a sprained toe. And they at first came out and said, you know, rest isn't going to do anything for it. It's an off-season thing, which sounds like surgery to me, at least. But then they go ahead and put him on the IL. He's clearly been hurt in my eyes. So,
yeah,
I'm glad he's on the IL almost. Like, if it's going to improve him in any way, please.
Rizzo is now officially on the IL as well.
In the dugout, though?
He had his epidural shot, and he was experiencing some serious headaches. Told him to be on bed rest, but like you said, he's back now, at least with the team. We'll see how that flares up potentially or how it goes. Benintendi had his wrist surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So he is now, hopefully we could get him back at some point, maybe before the postseason, but probably when we're in the
just
midst
give
of
us,
the postseason.
Just
run.
Give us one of him or Carp. One of them.
After wishful Friday, thinking, I'm really, maybe? After Friday, I'm really hoping for a left fielder. I'm not even going to.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got things to talk about, Rob.
Yeah, we got lots of things on that. But, yeah, name of the game now. With this injury stuff, you have DJ with the toe stuff. You have Rizzo with more stuff coming up, headaches coming with the back issue. You have Benintendi with his wrist problem. Luckily, you have Stanton coming back. We have Severino now, hopefully coming back very soon as well. We'll see how they ramp him up. Bader is now playing in some rehab games in Somerset. So it's a weird situation now with the Yankees, especially with these injuries, because we were so healthy for the first 3 months of the season. And then you have all of these other trickling down injuries that really stink. But
Even Stanton kind of said he was banged up after after he fouled the ball off his foot. Said it tightened up his Achilles.
Yeah, so I think that my personal feeling on it is that, and really this goes for a lot of teams in baseball, but it reigns true now with this Yankees team, is that they're going to go as far as their health really allows them to, because though you just saw how bad they were when they were dependent on singularly with a guy like Judge, and then
get hot at the right time.
You're missing all these little pieces, and if you get hot at the right time and have healthy bodies at the right time, is what can really propel you to a success in the postseason. And we saw some at times. We see the glaring holes when you're saying, "Damn, we would really use a healthy Andrew Benintendi, or we could really
healthy
use a,
DJ.
healthy Anthony Rizzo. Yeah. Healthy Rizzo, so we don't have to be seeing Marwin Gonzalez play first base every day. No offense to Marwin, but we do want to have that guy in Rizzo playing there. So, injuries now. It's going to be a lot of refreshing the Twitter feed and refreshing our updates, because we want these guys to be healthy by October, like first week of October would be wishful thinking, but like we want at least 90% of our team, hopefully, but that even at this point could be wishful, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, I really do think outside of Carpenter and Benny, who, you know, they both had broken bones, and I don't think Carp didn't have surgery, but you get what I mean. He broke his foot. Two dudes that had legitimate, very, season-altering injuries. I think outside of them, there's a good chance the majority of the team is healthy outside of whatever DJ's toe is. Because Rizzo's going to be back. Stanton's, I mean, it's clear they're going to baby Stanton the rest of the way, which, dude, I'm fine with if he's going to produce and be good in the playoffs when it matters. So I think literally outside of Carp, Benny, and, you know, question mark, I think DJ will be back, but it's how good he'll be. But I think most of them will be healthy.
Yeah, I mean, well, just to play devil's advocate with that, I think that, like, you're looking at the DJ thing with the foot, and I know it's a different part of the body, but we knew what he had with the hip and how he just was not the same player, and we even think that stretched for the whole season of 2021 of why he was so off and he wasn't DJ. So now you're adding in a foot injury, which you're doing everything. It doesn't matter where he is in the infield. Like, you're moving around. Your toe is going to be a part of the situation. And then the Rizzo stuff is weird because it's really been going on all year.
But they said it wasn't his back. They said it was headaches with this thing.
Okay, but then you look at the fact that they were not officially putting him on the IL, but they were saying, he'll be back. Like, that scares me.
I get what you're saying. I mean, the team doesn't have a track record of earning your trust, no, necessarily.
And they really don't. And then you look at a guy like Stanton, and of course, we saw him now this past weekend. He was performing well and hitting home runs and getting somewhat back on track. And then you don't know. They're telling us, is it really the calf or is it re-aggravating the Achilles? And he's probably not going to play the outfield at any time in the postseason or at the end of this stretch, I would have to venture to guess. And you saw him in the Minnesota series potentially do something and maybe re-aggravate it. It's just, I feel as though this team is now walking on eggshells. And if they're walking on eggshells when it comes to injuries with their most pivotal players outside of Judge, which is just so alarming, and that's why my confidence level for them being as good as they are in the postseason has dwindled. Obviously, you play the games and anything can happen, but I don't know. It's very looking at the injury report, and if those guys are not on their A game, and listen, they could play well for the last portion of the season, and then we'll be forgetting about the injuries, but I don't know. It's back stuff. Scary for me with Rizzo and Stanton with his injury history. I just think it's very scary stuff.
No, Rob, definitely fair to be nervous, like I said earlier. This team has done nothing. I mean, they've lied about IL stints, phantom ILs all over the place. They've done nothing to earn our trust. But I do think this was the game plan all summer. Not necessarily to have people actually get hurt like DJ and Rizzo with the headaches thing. But I think they wanted to give a lot of time off. But, yeah, dude, let's just get hot at the right time and kind of see what happens. That's state of the union for the Yanks. Get hot at the right time. Pitching is there. I'll say it. Pitching is there outside of someone that we'll talk about.
Honestly, that could be an issue within itself of that they bank on that every season. But that's for a conversation for another.
And that's never how it's supposed to be. It's always supposed to be the offense is bailing out the pitching.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been like that since 2017.
Yeah, we're just hoping that the pitching stays healthy, but now it's everybody. All right, so the Minnesota series, we take 3 out of 4. And then we welcome in the Tampa Bay Rays. So, for game one, me and Tyler were both in attendance for this one. Derek Jeter, Hall of Fame night. I was in there early. I was able to get one of the
plaques. I missed it all, Rob. I missed it all.
Yeah, you were too busy.
It's embarrassing.
At Billy. Dude, when I got there early, it was mobbed. It was a lot of people. I think it was 50,000. I think it was a sellout.
I wanted to get there, dude. It was definitely the most packed game I've been at the stadium this year. I've only been to 4, I think, but
I got off the train, immediately went to the stadium and waited in line. The lines were already crazy backed up, so I was able to,
Did I tell you? I didn't even go out before the game, so my buddy met me here for just the train had a ridiculous amount of delays, and then we're drinking on the train, pregame a little bit, just getting warm. And I spill a red drink all over my white tee that I had on to go to the game. So to delay me even more, I had to buy a shirt outside the stadium because I had pink all over me. So I guess that's my crappy excuse for missing.
It's all right. I mean, listen, people showed out for Jeter.
Yeah, it
showed
awesome.
Out for Jeter. It was really cool. I got the plaque, got everything. It was fun. It was very fun. I had a good line of Jeter came down in right field, and I saw him driving around the warning track, and he was funny. Dude, the boos for Hal and Cashman when he mentioned them were unreal, and he had the funniest follow-up saying, hey, you better not boo them. I think that he's going to try, and hopefully the Yankees embrace it, and when he offers his – insight or his
be a consultant or something, dude.
be a consultant, allow him to be in there and be in those guys' ears, because I think like guys like him and CC was there, like allow them to be around the team because I think it could help. But I don't know how it's going to go with this regime that's in charge. We'll see how it goes.
Especially him and Cash.
Jeter was definitely talking about how he is wanting to be more involved after this past 5 years of, you know, he was with the Marlins, but he talked about how he wanted to be more involved with the Yankees. And that was encouraging to me to hear. And I would really like him to be involved more. Also, we'll save the Randy Levine comments for after, but that just reminded me of him.
Speaking of the Hal boos, before we get into this game, I'd be lying if I wasn't literally screaming my whole way out of the stadium, "Sell the team, Hal," after this came on game one. But now I'm in a decent mood, Rob. So
yeah, it's easy. It's funny how that flips sometimes.
Oh yeah,
We'll see how these next weeks go. Montas really pitched very solid in this game. I have to say,
I completely disagree, dude. All right, we'll get into it. Let's run through it first. But I do.
Montas goes 5 2/3, 9 hits, 4 earned runs, 4 walks, 4 Ks. The big story that will then come to our conversation, honestly, is the fact that Aaron Hicks makes 2 back-to-back boneheaded plays in left field.
You almost felt bad for him, dude. Maybe not
at all when I saw the replay, because he just put his head down and did not, on that ball hit to left field, and did not try and show any urgency to get the ball and get it in and just
quit. But yeah, he thought it was foul. It was bad. It was really bad.
So the way that the game started out, honestly, the pitching line now, what it looks like for Montas, doesn't really look that good. But I think when you warrant yourself to 2 errors such in that way that then allow runners to go all over the bases – listen, was it an outstanding start? No, but I'm not going to kill him after those 2 bonehead moves. When you're left fielder, I look at the advanced stats on what it was. That ball in left field had a 75% catch ability.
Yeah, he should have caught it. 100%. Miguel Andujar would have caught it.
Honestly, I wouldn't even be surprised if Andujar caught it. And that ball hit then to him where he's tracking the ball to his left, and he's running with the glove on the other side. He then just allows it to go over his head and just completely misplays it.
Bro, he gets spun around so much. It's so bad.
Now he's getting spun around. It calls back to the previous game in center field when he made that boneheaded play. Was that against the Rays too?
Wait, which play in center field?
Remember the ball hit to center field? You were at that game.
Oh, yeah, and it was against the Rays. Yeah, I was with my buddy Carmine. Yeah, and you said to me, how bad did it look in person or something. Yeah, I was. Yeah, he got spun around on that one, too. He turned to his back shoulder and then spun all the way around and missed it because he made the wrong turn on the ball. You don't see center fielders do that, often at all.
No.
And he's not even playing center field anymore. Not after that.
He may not even play outfield at all. For one, he got benched, and it was horrible. So,
Bader and Cabrera are 100% spots over him as soon as Bader's healthy too.
Yeah, you would think I would
freaking hope so. He traded Jordan Montgomery for him.
So, I really the way that Montas looked, I thought that those two were just absolute killers, and I just couldn't. I
definitely agree. The line would look a lot better if one Hicks makes the catch. There was 2 outs, so those runs wouldn't have scored. You wouldn't have given up those 2 runs. But you walk 4 and you give up 9 hits. Even if we subtract the 2 hits that Hicks gave up, you're still putting 11 on base. I don't know. I'm only kind of holding it to this higher standard, I think, right now. Because 2 pods ago, I said I need him to be excellent in every single start in September for me to have a lick of confidence in him in October. He was really good last outing. And I did, he saved the pen and kind of went deep-ish into this game, into the 6th. I didn't think he was excellent. I didn't think he was a dude that's competing with Seve or Nestor for the two. That I think maybe that's why my scale is a little inflated with him. It's just, I didn't love it. Especially, dude, it's Jeter night. You can't give up a run in the first. What do you start? I think the Rays swung at the first couple pitches. Leadoff double or something? I don't even remember. Two back-to-back doubles, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know, but... I don't know. That's kind of my thought process with it, which I think I definitely understand where you're coming from. But again, I expected this dude to be a two, a legit two behind Cole. Not competing for the four.
That's gone out the window as of this moment. Aaron Hicks.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
Don't know how much we'll be hearing from him after that. That was just... horrible.
Did you hear how Boone said he wasn't even like he wasn't benched? He was like, I just had to get him out of there because, dude, I mean, it's almost like
Joey Gallo chants were happening.
Yeah, it was almost like a fatherly move from Hicks or from Boone, excuse me, to be like, okay, I cannot send this guy out there to just get eviscerated by fans because he bats the next inning, dude, gets out, gets his butt boot off. Yeah, I don't know, bro. You can't send him back out there. So I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I think everyone that's wanted Hicks bench was like, oh my god, finally. Like, when was the last time? I don't think Boone's done that. Someone makes an error in the field and he's benched him.
Well, he benched him the next day.
No, he pulled Flo. He put Flo.
No, I know. No, I'm saying.
The next day.
The last time, like when you saw him in center field make that error, that was the next time he benched him.
Oh, okay.
Not necessarily bench him immediately in that spot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
What a lot of times Yankee fans want. All right, game two. Actually, both games were after this. It was very nice to see. Jameson Taillon in this goes 7 1/3, 6 hits, 3 earned runs, 1 walk, 8 Ks. The Yankees scored offense in this one very differently. 7 straight singles to start the game. And 8 singles in the first.
Nuts, dude. It was absolutely nuts.
And they score 7 runs in the first 2 innings. Or the first inning, they score 6, and then Donaldson follows it up with a home run in the bottom of the second.
Knock Kluber out after two-thirds of an inning? I think that...
Pimps one off the wall. Pimps a single. That guy is just...
He's so lucky it didn't mean anything. Because I'd be on here killing him right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he did the exact same thing he did a week ago. The exact same thing. Pimped it, jogged. Oops, it's off the top of the wall. Got to scurry to first, except this time he stayed at first and didn't get thrown out. Come on, dude. But dad strength, I mean, I'm here for it, bro. It's not like I'm going to root against you. I want you to play well. Just run. Like, I mean, is it that hard? Maybe. I don't know.
Stan hits a home run off of a position player, and clearly it got him going to then go in the next game.
Oh, yeah.
But... the Yankees win this one 10-3. Johnny Laza has a really good inning in the ninth. All the top seven hitters all had 2+ hits. And Kluber actually had his shortest start of the season, like you said, going only 0.2 innings. And the Yankees go ahead and they demolish them, which is very sight that we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, they,
especially against a good team.
Yeah, they hadn't had a laugher in a long time. Also, just to backtrack real quick, Stanton, first time we saw Stanton was the night before the game we were at in the pinch hit in like the 7th, 8th, or 9th or something like that. Puts up a pretty decent at-bat. I think he ended up striking out, but he worked the count 3-2. I think he fouled a couple off. It was a long at-bat. And then, as you said, in this one, he homers off the position player. And the quote after the game was fire. He was like, and he like gave the media like little, what you talking about? Like, because they said, does it matter? And he was like, what do you mean? Of course it matters. Like, if I struck out, it would have been the same thing. So I might as well try and hit a homer. And we're like, especially if he's going to get you going, like you said, like, please do. I love it.
Yeah. I got to agree. All right. Game three. Domingo Germán, opener in this one. It was really cool. This obviously yesterday was 9/11 of the 21st anniversary of the attacks, and he was really cool. Domingo running around with the flag before his start. He was on short rest, so he only pitched one inning in this, but didn't really matter because The Yankees started off hot with a Gleyber Torres home run to go up 3-0, and then they followed it up in the second, going up on a Judge sack fly, and then Stanton hits another home run. Gleyber Torres then hits another home run, so Gleyber gets two home runs, so they're up 8. And then Oswaldo Cabrera hits a home run. I forgot that that was in the same inning.
His first home run.
Up 10-1. And then at this point, I think most of us maybe shifted our focus to football first football day. But keeping an eye on it, and the Yankees took this one 10. The Rays got some runs in the top of the sixth as well as the top of the ninth, and go up 10-4. And they win. Your boy Gleyber gets two home runs.
Needed it, dude. All right, so I've had a couple of rants on this show this year. I think IKF and Gleyber were probably my two most passionate ones. And I'm just going to say it's legitimately reverse psychology. I never thought any of those things. I've always thought Gleyber was the best. I'm just kidding. Clearly, Gleyber was about as bad as you could be for like 2 months. And he goes ahead and hits a couple home runs this series. I think even you go back to the Minnesota games, you look on Yankees Twitter, a lot of people were kind of saying, hey, like Gleyber's kind of, he drove a double to right field. Like it looks like his swing might be back. I'm trying to pull up his stats since September has happened, and I just kind of want to see where he's at. But dude, hey, like I said with Donaldson, I'll rip people all day when they're playing bad, but I'm not going to be upset at all when they're playing well, Rob. Like, just not just to prove my narrative. I want to be wrong. If it means that the Yankees are going to win, it makes my life happier. I'll be wrong all the time. So since September 1st, obviously super small sample size, 220 average, nothing to get too excited about. 300 on base, 472 slug, 120 WRC+. So, I don't know. 8 hits, 3 homers, 7 RBIs. I think he had 2 in like 2 months or something like that when he was bad for all of July and August basically. So, again, it goes back to kind of getting hot at the right time. If Gleyber Torres can be good and be a large part of this team end of September, going into October, that's kind of huge for the Yanks, especially with DJ Hurt right now. Because it looks like Cabrera's an outfielder, bro. Like that. I mean, he's also disgusting in the outfield. Like, it's absurd.
Yeah, yeah. He makes some plays. He had a runner thrown out again in this series. Dude's a good player. But I guess that transitions us well into the savages of the series.
Yeah. My guys are fucking savages in that fucking match,
right? Spoiler alert, you just talked about yours. I guess you could go ahead and say it.
Oh, savage of the series. Yeah, dude, mine was Gleyber. I actually want to see what he ended this series with, his stats were. But, bro, he's having fun again, Rob. And that's something I literally feel like I haven't. I typed in Gleyber series game logs, Gleyber Torres game logs. But that's literally something I feel like I haven't seen him do. We talk about this every time he's struggling. Puppy dog Gleyber when he's playing like ass. He starts playing well. All of a sudden, the dude starts smiling again. Gleyber, just start smiling. You'll start playing well. 2 homers in the series, 5 RBIs, 5 hits, hit in every game. So he was 5-for-14. No walks, 2 Ks. Like I said, could be a big part if you continue to play well down the stretch. First half, Gleyber was good Gleyber. You were over an 800 OPS dude. Second half, Gleyber's been bad, but you can turn around with a good September, dude. So, Gleyber Torres, savage.
Yep. All right, for my savage of the series, I was going to go with Giancarlo Stanton. 3-for-8, 2 home runs, 4 RBIs. He's probably playing on a bum leg, but I know one of those home runs was coming off of a position player. But listen, I mean, he performed, and he was a catalyst and in these wins, and he gave us more insurance on the second game, and his at bats are looking a little better, which I like to see, and that's what we're going to need from him. Could have obviously gone with Oswaldo for his first career home run.
Mm-hmm.
So honorable mention there, but yeah, that's who I was going for this series. I mean, we've been missing him for a month, so I guess I had to give it to him. All right, MVPs of sucking.
They stink.
Which one are you going to take? Which one are you going to take?
I'm going to give you your boy. I'm going to take my boy in Frankie Montas. He's my MVP of sucking this week. Yanks only lose one game. It was the game he pitched. One can argue it wasn't his fault that the pitching line ended that way. It'd be a pretty good argument you could make, too. Frankly, the four walks kill me. The seven hits that he actually gave up kill me. In reality, it was nine because of the way they scored Hicks's nonsense in the outfield. But again, it comes back because it comes back to the fact that I grade you on a higher scale. You were brought in here to be an impact, and just decent quality starts that just kind of move the needle aren't doing it for me. So yeah, Frankie.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense, makes sense. All right, so if you couldn't already tell who I was going to give my MVP of sucking to, it'd be Aaron Hicks. Listen, I know it's been rough for him this season. Fans the other night were chanting Joey Gallo at him. We know that Joey Gallo has had his struggles here, and they're now focusing their attention on Hicks in that way. And like you said, Boone took him out of the game, one, because he was benching him, but two, to save him from the rash from the fans. But you can't drop two back-to-back balls. We were both in the stadium on Jeter night. It killed the entire momentum of the game, and after that happened, it felt like all the energy and the life of the stadium just went out.
It felt like it was shifted to hating Hicks. Like, that's literally what it felt like.
And I really, the last time that we thought that drop ball against Tampa previously in center field was the nail in the coffin. But if this is, I mean, you got a guy like Bader coming back. Hopefully he's all set to go, playing on that foot. You have now the emergence of Oswaldo Cabrera to play either spots in the corner outfield, and now you can have Judge play center field. So really, Hicks doesn't fit into the equation. I personally had, when he first came in and he had that season back in 2018, and you saw the way that he performed in the playoffs, having that home run off Verlander, you thought, wow, like Aaron Hicks, this guy, he had the tools. Like, he
has some swag.
Got a little bit of swag, but it's not panning out. And he doesn't do it on a consistent enough basis. And we knew coming in that he talked about the 30-30 season that he was putting as an expectation.
Yep.
Fans will now joke about it with him, but I used to be a big Hicks fan, but now there's just no real way of defending him at this point. You really can't. You look at the two drop balls and you go, what the hell is that?
Uh-huh.
So, will fans be a little too harsh on him? Yeah, fans, the Yankee fans are never
define
really
harsh, though.
That's true. Yankee fans are never really that polite at times when you're playing the way he's playing.
Playing so, in New York, bro.
Comes with the territory. With the territory. So that's how you can describe it. But yeah, Aaron Hicks, his days are probably numbered with the team, to say the least.
Yeah, so. I've been talking. I mean, can't argue with it, Rob. Great points. I've been talking with my buddy a lot too about off-season plans and what I think will happen, which I should not be doing. Like, I should just be focused on this season. But I do think there's a good chance Donaldson and Hicks, like, I think Cashman's going to try and make some money disappear type of thing. So we'll see. You could be right. We might not see any of Hicks in the postseason at all, unless it's, God forbid, do I say defensive replacement? They still might view him as that, dude. Imagine if, especially if Carp's healthy or something, we don't know. Or Cabrera, they pull him. Cabrera, I don't know. All right.
Ain't no way. Ain't no fucking way.
would be wild. But Rob, there is an individual that I would like to talk about on this pod that has been playing very well. Maybe not. He's made some errors in the field. I mean, I'm not going to be sold on his glove, period. But since Oswald Peraza has been called up, IKF has actually been raking. He hit a grand slam for the love of God. We were there, Rob. Rob didn't even know it was a grand slam until after. He thought it was a three-run homer. But just in the month of September, Rob, he's batting .364 with a .432 on base, a .576 slugging, and a 192 WRC plus. He's got two homers. He only had one the first 110 games. 12 hits, one double. That's three extra base hits, seven RBIs, and three stolen bases. Listen, bro. Again, just prove me wrong, dude. I don't want to be right. Like, I don't want to ever be right if I'm going to rag on a Yankees player and they're going to turn around and just start raking. Like, I'll continue to rag on everyone then. Because it clearly works in some fashion. IKF has legitimately been good the last 2 weeks. I don't know if it will continue. I mean, if I had to put my life on it, I would say it wouldn't. I think what I would really like is for IKF to play third. Yep. And Peraza to be the shortstop. Doesn't seem like that's going to happen because Peraza had to take a seat for 2 days as soon as Donaldson came back. So you can tell that the Yankees love Donaldson at third, and they're not ready to shift away from IKF right now. And the
too Yankee, much money invested in yeah. it, I think, that that's the way they can't, they're thinking.
Yeah, they can't say no yet, and you know just after the last couple weeks, especially Donaldson coming back with the dad strength, you know that Yankees front office, they I don't know, they ordered a bucket of chicken or something after because they were happy. Donaldson hit a homer right after IKF had a big couple weeks. I mean, they're loving it right now. So it's kind of sad because I don't think we'll see Peraza as much, especially in the postseason. I think if IKF is good for even another series, I think he's the shortstop, unfortunately. But you never know. But he's been very good, and I just wanted to point that out because I absolutely killed him the other day. Same with Kleber.
Twitter will still continue to lose its mind over, I mean, when they don't see Peraza in, but that's just I think that's just their...
They're stubborn.
They played Joey Gallo for as long as they have. They played Aaron Hicks for as long as they have. It's...
Again, they treat the dudes that they trade for like kings, and they treat their prospects like dirt.
They're going to be using them, or they're going to be using them until the last time that they're like, all right, we can't. Yeah. This is the last straw. Sometimes when you think it's the last straw, it's not the last
straw. There's still 10 more straws to go. They're going to die on that hill, Rob, regardless.
Pretty much. All right, to end it off, I want to talk about the Randy LaVine comments.
Yes.
Because those were interesting to hear.
Dude's a lawyer.
And I know I don't like projecting because we're still in the season, but the season that Aaron Judge is having right now is obviously just crazy. It's so good. It's unbelievable. But president of the Yankees, Randy LaVine, went on a New York Post podcast. I think it was with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. He was asked about Judge. And yeah, what a duo. And he is asked about Judge, and he said, "We love Aaron Judge. We think Aaron Judge is an all-time Yankee. We think that he's a great player, beyond a great player. We think he's a great person, and that's why we offered him the highest position player contract in the history of the Yankees. It's a negotiation. We'll talk with him and his representatives this offseason. How do we keep him? Then it will be up to him. Does he want to stay here? Does he want to go someplace else? Is somebody else offering him a better deal? We know his worth. It takes two to tango. We don't know what is in his mind. All we can do is show him how much we'd like for him to be a Yankee. Negotiations have to be in the realm of reality, not unreality." So
it could have lived without the last part.
Yeah, to me, I really, every time that they say something like that, it really makes my confidence level of them signing him a little dwindle a little each time. And the way that Aaron Judge is playing right now, he could really demand any sort of money that he really wants. And I said this to you, I think it was the first, I was in Cancun.
I still don't think he'll get 10 years, Rob. I still don't think he's getting 10 years.
I think the years, but I think you had said to me, they see his worth at a certain point, and they're going to offer it based on his value and the numbers that he produces. And I think I said to you, while I was on my trip, I said, Dude, he may go out there and have a effing historic season and be unbelievable and blow us out of the water and tell those numbers to go fuck themselves.
I still don't think it changes much, dude. I really don't.
But
maybe like $5 million on the AAV. I don't think he's making Scherzer money. Like not a chance.
He wants to be paid. Here's what I know for definitively is he wants to be the highest annual paid player, maybe position
player, because Max makes what, 44?
But here's what I think is even more key is he wants to be the highest annual salary on his own team to start with. He wants to be higher paid than Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
He wants to have a higher annual salary than Gerrit Cole. I think that is a definite. Now, I just see that the way that LaVine talked in the comments about that, and then you pair together how the organization went back and forth with him about the labor or about his, not the labor negotiations, about his arbitration money. And you see how they were talking between $21 million and $17 million. And even look at prior history. If a lot of people watch the Derek Jeter documentary, Derek Jeter went up in front of the whole ESPYs and talked about how George Steinbrenner was nickeling and diming him over his money for his arbitration money.
You can look at Cano too, dude.
This is past history. You can see what happens. Like, this is a trend. So, Tyler, you very well may be right. And they may know what number that he's going to get. And this is what they're going to offer him. But it wouldn't surprise me if he tells them, okay, I will be fully willing to look elsewhere for more money.
Yeah, I also don't know where he wants to play, dude. He might not want to be in New York.
Yeah, I really think, like, listen, I do believe the Yankees have a certain lore, and I do think that people love to play for the Yankees, and I do think Aaron Judge has a great appreciation for the Yankees, but I also think that he has a great appreciation for himself and for what he's worth, and he's going to go out and he's going to find the best suitable thing. And may that be the San Francisco Giants? Yeah. He grew up rooting for the Giants. He talked about it in that interview with Harold Reynolds earlier this season. Like, that is in the realm of possibility. So when these comments come out talking about how it takes two to tango, yeah, it will take two to tango. And it wouldn't surprise me if during this tango he's able to get a better contract. And honestly, even if in their mind that they think that they did right by him and they think that they offered him a fair deal, but if they let him walk after this year, may it be right or not, fans are going to not play well to that, and they are going to be effing mad. Very, very mad.
Yeah.
And honestly, rightfully so. You can't just have a guy having a historic season, then he goes out and he leaves, and then it just – there's no real reasoning with it at that point. And I understand, like, it's just tough. It's tough.
Yeah, I mean – fans will definitely be mad either way. I think the logical aspect of it will come down to whatever number the Yankees end up offering him. And if the Yankees offer him similar money to what the Giants offer him, same years, same money, and he picks San Fran, I don't think there's anything mad to be about.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've said it throughout the season numerous times too, Rob. This team is going to look a whole lot different. Not just next year, but the year after too. I mean, breaking news to everyone. This is an old-ass team, bro. And they have a ton of young position players in the minors. Like, just think about the old people on this team. DJ, Donaldson, Stan. Wow, is that it? No, it's not it. Hicks, but even Judge is turning 31. Stan's, what, 32? Cole's in his 30s. I mean, it's an older team, so there's going to be a lot of shuffling and buffling. I mean, IKF's not your starting shortstop forever. Glaber's almost hitting free agency soon. I mean, team's going to look a lot different, I think, with or without Judge, but obviously I hope they sign him. I don't know.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too. All right, so we head off to Boston tomorrow and got two games set and then headed to Milwaukee after that.
Don't ruin it. Win the series against Boston. Don't ruin this one.
Don't ruin it.
Like, don't ruin this the series win they just – the back-to-back series wins they just had by losing a 69-win team.
Yeah. Yep. Can't have that happen. All right, that is it for episode number 113. As always, be sure to subscribe, leave us a rate and review, follow us on our socials at 4Savages on Twitter, at 4TrainSavages on Instagram, TikTok. Go follow us there. Appreciate you guys for listening to 113. We'll catch you next time.